MechCast, Sunday, April 22nd, 2018. Hey, MechGeeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for MechGeeks by MechGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, we've got a fun show for you today because we're going to do something a little different. It's been a little while since we've had a guest on the show, and I wanted to change that this week. And I was thinking about the iPhone a little bit when I got an email from our guest, the guest who's going to be on this show. And he's been working on something related to iPhone. And I thought, hey, we've had the iPhone now for a long time, at least in terms of technology years, and gone through many variants and many versions of iOS and those sorts of things. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to look back and maybe review and talk about some of the key milestones as we see it in the development of the iPhone, and what got us from iPhone version 1 and iOS version 1 to the iPhone 10 and iOS 11, moving on to iOS 12 here pretty soon. And I thought no better person is around who could talk to me about that than David Sparks. Mac Sparky from the Mac Power Users, also Mac Sparky Field Guides, and he does have a new iPhone-related book coming out. So we're going to get into all of that in this episode. We're going to talk to him, talk about the iPhone. We're going to talk a little bit about his book, and then we're also going to talk about his whole development process, creating ebooks, and how Apple is maybe even changing that now. So it should be a lot of fun. Stay tuned for that. But before we get into the interview, I want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. And I have a new sponsor here on the MacCast, and I'm super excited because I am a huge fan of Markdown. I do everything that I do, almost everything, all my writing now is done in text, and more specifically inside Markdown. And I've gone through all the different editors. A few months back, I actually switched to Ulysses, and Ulysses is now the new sponsor here on the MacCast. And Ulysses is a writing application for your Mac, for your iPad, for your iPhone. It doesn't matter the platform, and that's one thing that I need in my Markdown editor, is it has to be on every platform because I like a consistent user experience, and Ulysses has that. They were the Apple Design winner in 2016. Another thing that I need with my editor is organization, and Ulysses has that too. I can keep all of my stuff together. I've got stuff for managing my different files. Doesn't matter whether it's a whole series of files or just one-off. They give me all of the tools that I need, including things like nested groups. I can set up writing goals. I can add keywords so I can find things very easily. I can set up filters so I can cull things together, and it all works really great. Plus, it all syncs through iCloud, and I can do all my writing. It has all my formatting tools. Another really nice feature is distraction-free writing modes, so you can focus right in on the text. They have a typewriter mode if you want to just get right into a paragraph or a specific sentence and kind of see that highlighted and really focus on your things. And also really important to me is the ability to export, because you know the advantage of writing all in text is that it's portable, it's fast, it's easy to do. But often when you're handing off documents, you want them in a format that other people are going to find beautiful. And they have great templates that you can export into. You can export into PDF. You can export into Word docs, EPUB, HTML, text. It doesn't matter. It's totally flexible. Another really nice thing is integration for easy publishing to blogs like WordPress. Or if you write on Medium, you can do that too. And the pricing is fabulous. So you can get a monthly subscription for $4.99, $40 a year if you want a yearly subscription. And they have discounts for students. You can get that at $10.99. And even better for MacCast listeners, they have a great offer. They are going to give you free a 3-month trial period. All you have to do is go to ulyssesapp.com /MacCast. You can also download it for free on the App Store, and they do have a free 14-day trial, but you're going to get to try it out for 3 months and see if it's something that's going to work for you. And if you do any kind of writing with text, I guarantee you it will. So you can get more information at ulyssesapp.com, but more importantly, go to ulyssesapp.com/MacCast. That's ulyssesapp.com/MacCast to try out Ulysses for free for 3 months. And again, you get it on all your platforms. So grab it for your Mac, your iPhone, your iPad, and a huge thanks to Ulysses for their support of the MacCast. All right, let's not delay anymore. Let's get into a little bit of iPhone history, talk about some of the features and milestones, some of the things that we love about the iPhone, maybe some of the stuff that we also kind of find funny or interesting about the iPhone. There's also a great section in here where David brought up all the old apps that we used to have. And so we did a little fun game with that, and you're invited to participate. So play along and send me your emails and comments on that after you hear this. But here is David Sparks, Mac Sparky, on the iPhone. Well, hey, David, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Adam. How are you today?
I'm okay. We're both in Southern California, so weather's decent today. It was a little chilly yesterday, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 60. I felt like I had to get my parka out.
I know. I always say I'm a total weather wimp. I cannot handle weather whatsoever. You know, it gets down to 50, and I'm like, oh, turn on the heater. Get the fire going.
It absolutely ruins you. I mean, I think I could not live anywhere else because I grew up here. We went to we had a big family vacation. We went to London over winter time. Mm-hmm. And we went to Stonehenge, and it's like up in these hills, and it was really cold and the wind was blowing through there, and I have never been so cold in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. I also realized when I fired up Skype, it said we hadn't chatted in a year on
Skype. That's not right.
Well, I know we've seen each other personally, but I'm trying to remember the last time we did a recording. So thank you for agreeing to come back and talk with us here on the show. I appreciate it.
Anytime, man.
Yeah.
I'm always ready to come on the MacCast.
I already kind of prepped the folks, but what we're going to be getting into a little bit is some iPhone stuff. And I got tickled to give you a call because I know you have a new book that's iPhone related out. So I think we'll get to that. We'll kind of get to that later and talk about that a little bit. I also want to talk to you about the whole process because it's been a while. I know we did that probably a couple of years ago when you first started. So I'm curious to hear how the process has changed for you, if it has changed and that sort of thing. So
sure. Sure.
But what it got me thinking about when I saw your email was, wow, you know, the iPhone, we've had the iPhone through 11 versions of the operating system. I don't know if those totally, I was trying to remember if that totally maps to years. I think it might actually, right? Have we had a consistent one iPhone for a year? That might be the first question to ask.
No, I think it has. I don't think they've ever missed a year. And do you remember like iOS 2 with the little roadmap icon? I mean, we really didn't know what to expect at the time. But of course, they're going to have yearly updates to the operating system.
Right. Yep. So, but it got me thinking like, wow, we've been through a lot with the iPhone. It started in a place. It's obviously very different now. And I thought it'd be fun to kind of go through and just between your memory and my memory and maybe some notes from the internet and information, just kind of run down what our experiences and sort of what we saw as milestone events for the iPhone and those sorts of things. So I guess my first question for you was, did you have the original iPhone? Did you get the first version?
Oh, man, I got it. Did I get it? I got in line. In fact, I remember you and I were already friends when the first iPhone came out.
Yep.
And we were at some podcaster event somewhere, and you were saying this was because somebody sent you one, if memory serves.
That is correct. I did not buy one.
In the beginning, you weren't totally sold. You're like, I don't know, I'm not sure. And I was thinking to myself, Adam, how could you be missing this boat? I mean,
it was a cost thing. You remember?
Yeah, I know. It was
$600 at a time when people would give you a cell phone if you walked into a carrier store, right?
But you, the way you were saying it is you weren't talking about the cost. You were like, oh, I'm not sure. You know, I know what you were thinking. But the no, I'm with you. I was originally like, I don't need this new fancy iPhone. And I'll tell you what did it for me was those videos that came out like about a week before the phone released. There were these videos. It was this guy. I think he was had the Steve Jobs black turtleneck and the glasses on. However, his name was like Mike or something. And they did these walkthrough videos where they had the iPhone and they'd say, here's how you get directions. Here's how you make a call.
Oh, that's right. Apple did a bunch of sort of Steve Jobs clone videos. I totally forgot about those.
And I would watch those videos and I watched them once. I'm like, wow. And I watched them a couple times. And after I watched them two or three times, I couldn't sleep. I had to get one of these iPhones so bad. Because it was so much better than anything that had existed before. I mean, it really was obvious from the beginning to me that this is going to be something special.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that I had said I didn't want, I think I was trying to convince myself that I didn't want one probably
when I was talking to you.
I literally couldn't afford it. I mean, I really couldn't afford it at the time. I did not have that much money to spend on a phone.
Oh, when we had a flip side, when you showed me your drone, and I'm like, I'm not interested in drones, and secretly I want one desperately, but I can't spend the money on it. You know, so we all do that to ourselves on occasion.
Well, that was another thing that was sent to me, but I have the best listeners in the world, if I ever told you.
No, I totally agree.
Because my Phantom was also sent to me by a listener, so I didn't buy that either. Yeah, so luckily I had a listener who wanted to hear me talk about it and was willing to send me a couple iPhones. Actually, she sent me one for me and one for my wife.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's
well,
great.
I think in a way, it was just he really wanted to hear my opinions on it. And, you know, Steve Jobs made a big deal at the announcement, and I was at the announcement. That was the other thing. Probably the most amazing thing for me about the first iPhone was being at Macworld when it was announced and Steve was on stage and being able to see it live. And he comes out and he says, you know, we're announcing new products. I think he said three new products today, right?
Yeah.
And a revolutionary iPod and a revolutionary phone and an amazing internet communicator. And then you know, the big reveal was that these were all one thing.
Yeah. Are you getting it yet? I think that's what he said, something like that. Yeah.
But I mean, it's very different. I think it's easy to forget how, you know, while it was an amazing thing and it obviously changed the landscape of the entire phone market, right, which was what Apple was trying to do, it didn't do a ton of things that were very different than, you know, what we already had. But it was all in one device, and it didn't have apps. Like, that was I remember that being a big complaint for a lot of people.
I would disagree partly. I'll tell you what it did, because I had the Palm Pilot or the Palm Trio.
Trio.
In fact, I was, you know, I'm such an Apple nerd. I had totally like Mac'd it out. I had like got all these quasi legal, you know, modifications to it. So it had like OS X icons and fonts and everything. Right. Yeah, because I'm such a weirdo. But the thing that they did that was immediately actually there's a couple things that really stood out to me immediately. The first was the way it does the web. I mean, nothing ever did the internet on a pocket device the way the iPhone did.
Right. Yeah.
Before it was some weird bastardization of a text render of whatever your website was, and nothing ever really worked. You could never really depend on it. Render the web.
Let's be honest. It was almost no better. It was like going back to 1990, you know, whatever, and using links on the college, you know, computer.
Yeah. In some ways it was worse because you knew what real internet was supposed to be like, and it just wasn't there. And I remember like on the Trio when it would start loading, and the trick would be to tap a link as it was rendered as original text before it tried to turn it into something that looked like the internet. Because if you let it do that, it just would just grind for minutes and minutes before it got to the point again where you could tap a link. So it was like you clicked on a website and then you had to hit the link real quick as it was just plain text, you know. but so the iPhone completely turned that on its head. And I thought that was massively different. Another part of it, I mean, there's a lot of it now that I think about it. But the way it rendered maps was way better. I was talking to my kids. My youngest daughter just got her license. And I was telling her when I got my license, you know, back in whatever, it was, 1984, you know, I got my license. My dad, the big thing in my family was you got a box of maps. That was your present when you got your driver's license. And my dad bought me literally a box of Thomas guides, which in Southern California is the definitive map of the time. And I would drive around with a box of maps in my trunk. So if I had to go somewhere, I could get the maps out and figure out how to get there. And the iPhone was the first thing to really just make that with that big screen. You know, back when Google and Apple were still kissing cousins, you know, Google just that maps, whole experience.
And YouTube and I mean, kind of the revolutionary things in the operating system really were the maps, although there was no GPS.
Yeah. Right.
So you didn't have that, but you had maps. So you could pull things up, but you couldn't see where you were.
My Thomas guides didn't have GPS either. So right.
I'm saying a lot of these things to remind people, like, you know, because it's easy to forget that it was great and revolutionary, but also somewhat limited. Another huge thing that we totally take for granted. I know I take for granted now was visual voicemail. Like that was one of the features I was most excited about.
Yeah.
You know,
that's because we were used to using phones as phones back then. I thought email, a lot of people hated it for email, but I liked the visual interface for email. And I guess it was kind of interesting because when the phone first came out, everybody could only talk about the keyboard, how the phone was going to fail because it didn't have an actual keyboard. And everybody you met in real life, all just presumed it was going to be terrible. You know, BlackBerry was supreme at the time. And, you know, I'm my day job, I'm a lawyer. I'm surrounded by BlackBerry fools, you know, back then. And it seemed to me that what was interesting about that was that really didn't last very long. You know, the complaints about no keyboard. It's like most people that got their hands on an iPhone stopped thinking about the fixed keyboard pretty quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was a major change. And I think Steve Jobs was right on point when he said, you know, these devices with a keyboard are a problem because you can't update them or change them. Like if you need to add a new feature or it needs to adapt, you can't do it without getting a whole new version, right?
Yeah.
To have all that in software. And we've seen Apple over the years, you know, tweak the keyboard in many ways, add tons of new features like emoji and quick type and all those things. And none of those things obviously would be easily doable on a physical keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think of anything else with the original iPhone. I just remember seeing it spinning in a little pedestal at Macworld.
I got more.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Even with the original one?
Oh no, I got more that was just interesting. Points about it. And one is that it had the slower network. It did not have.
Oh, yeah. We definitely have to talk about that.
So I think it was the 2G network at that time. And there were phones out with a faster 3G network.
Right.
That was interesting to people.
And I still thought it was amazing. That's the thing. The funny thing about the 2G is because the browsing experience, like you were saying earlier, was so good, you were like willing to wait. And I don't even remember it bothering me. Until I had a 3G phone, and then I was like, "Oh my god, how did I live?" But when I only had the 2G, I thought it was amazing, and you just waited, right? You just kind of okay.
Well, but also you were usually on Wi-Fi. I mean, that's the first thing you do is you hook it up to your Wi-Fi at your work and your home and wherever. So you really only felt the 2G when you were out and about, and that was fine. The other thing about it, I thought the industrial design on the original one was some of the best of all the iPhones. I really like that feel, that aluminum and the, you know, the little plastic strip and the glass front. I mean, in hindsight, it was a great design.
Yeah. Yeah. It still definitely stands the test of time. I mean, that's something about, I think I feel about all of Apple's design. Like I go back and I look at my old iPods and I look at my old, even my old original iPhone, which I still have. And it's like this thing, you know, yes, it's thick and it's heavy and it feels a little bit clunky in your hand, but sitting on a shelf and just looking at it, it's still a gorgeous piece of technology.
Yeah. And the screen was huge. And that's hard to understand in today's world when, you know, the right. phone screens are approaching tablet size, but
3.5 inches.
Yeah. I mean, if you think the screen is small, you know, Google Palm Trio and compare the screens between those two and you'll see what I mean. Oh, and also another thing is the screen was better. I mean, it was a beautiful screen.
The quality of it.
Was great. Yeah. The resolution, it was long before Retina screens, but it still was much tighter resolution than you saw on most mobile devices. I don't know. It was just finally a phone that had somebody that, you know, gave a damn about user interface design working on it. You know, it felt like for all the phones you bought at the time, user interface was always like third or fourth tier problem to be solved. And you know, even on the Palm Trio, you had to tap through so many menus and you know, it, just even the operating system. I mean, I remember on my Palm Trio, there was an app because about every 2 or 3 months, it would just duplicate all your contacts. This is the built-in contacts app on the Palm Trio. It just, for some reason, there was a bug or something. And if you had 100 contacts, then you had 200. And it was just two of every one. And then the problem, I don't know what the explanation of this programming problem was, but if it was just a bug or whatever. But then once it started, it would multiply on itself. So like if you waited a couple days, then you'd have 4 copies of every contact. And then like if you waited a week, you'd have like 20 copies of every contact. Wow. You know? And I don't know why it did that. I brought it into the phone store because that's where you went. And the guy's like, I don't know. They just do that sometimes. So I said, well, what are you supposed to do? And he says, well, you just go through and you delete the duplicates. And the way the operating system was designed to delete it, you had to like tap on it and then you had to swipe. No, you didn't swipe back. Then you tap on it, you press another button, then you press a confirm button. I counted. It was like 5 taps to delete a contact. And if you had 100 contacts, that was like 500 taps to fix this bug, you know, that would happen to you randomly. And then somebody came out with an app for the Palm Trio. I think it was called Dedupe, if memory serves, Dedupe. Right. And it was $50. And what it
knew
did
his market.
And all it did was it would look for duplicate contacts and delete all the duplicates except one. We were so happy to pay $50 for this app. I mean, it was like I couldn't write the check fast enough. That's the world we were coming from. And it's easy to forget about that. But the iPhone right. really, you know, with changed the design and the, you know, just the way Apple just said, okay, we're going to start over with the phone. It just changed everything.
Yeah. And I said earlier, you know, it didn't have GPS. I forgot that they did, though, have that Wi-Fi triangulation thing.
Yeah.
Where it would use Wi-Fi yeah. hotspots and it could like figure out from public hotspots pretty accurately where you were. I mean, it wasn't dead on like GPS, but it even did a pretty good job at that for being back in the day.
Well, I mean, just
but no like, apps and no cut copy paste, right?
Yeah, everybody went crazy over no cut copy paste. and probably justifiably, but
that was a weird feature to omit. I'd love to know the story behind that from some engineers. I'm going to have to track some people down and figure out.
I feel like that's part of like the old Apple was kind of that mindset. It's like, unless we can do it right, we're just not going to do it. And if that's a deal breaker for you, then so be it.
Right.
Another thing the original iPhone did was it scrolled like butter. I mean, it moved so fast when you scrolled in Safari. But sometimes you would scroll faster than the memory cache could keep up with you. And when it did that, it just put this grid in the background.
Right.
But they made a decision. They said, we're not going to slow down the scrolling for any reason. And if it comes to it, we'll just display the grid. And then when the user stops scrolling, it'll catch up.
Right.
And it's like, that was the right decision. And
so too, yeah.
And I mean, you look at some of the stuff they do now. I don't like to be one of those people that's always hating on Apple because I think it's a big company that does a lot of things right. But I feel like in some way they've lost their that priority of saying we're going to do it right. Even if we don't get it right, we're not going to ship it. Like when I look at the Apple Watch version 1, the apps in it, sometimes I think it shouldn't have shipped with apps. Yeah.
Right.
Whereas I think those old days they probably wouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So, and then they jump right from the iPhone to the iPhone
3G.
3G.
Yeah. And plastic phone.
That changed everything. Yeah, slight design change, but that wasn't a huge design change, right? We just, the whole back went to plastic instead of the aluminum, which felt like a little bit like a downgrade, but
oh, totally.
But you got a huge upgrade in cellular performance.
Yeah, and that's when they got on the contracts with the cellular providers, and that's when the iPhone really blew up. But in my opinion, the design of the 3G is way worse. I think it was a huge backward step with the design, and I understand they needed it to make it plastic so the antennas would work, and I'm sure there's a lot of good reasons for it, but at the time I was unhappy with the design change.
You didn't like the design change? Well, you put a case on it and away you go, right? How were you back in the day? I never used a case on my phone until Apple came out with the Apple leather cases.
Yeah, I rarely so I used
caseless.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when they had AppleCare. I used to call AppleCare my invisible case. And the funny thing is I've got an iPhone 10 in my pocket right now that doesn't have a case on it.
Right.
So, but I'm pretty careful.
So, and then the second version of iOS, iOS 2, was when we got the App Store and apps.
Yeah.
Right. So that definitely has to be considered, you know, a huge milestone, especially in hindsight now, right?
Did you jailbreak your iPhone 1?
You know what's I'm laughing about that because not really in any permanent capacity. But I did it one time. I forget why. I wanted to check something out somebody had told me about. And I did, I don't think it was even a full jailbreak. I think it was, I remember I wanted to do tethering. And so there was like an iOS profile sort of hack where you could enable tethering on AT&T.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
So I had done that. So that wasn't a full jailbreak. But it never worked very well. And I ended up just like removing it or taking it off. But what I didn't realize was that hack would get pulled into my backups. So I started having trouble with my phone, and I did the thing I was supposed to do, which was do a backup and an erase and a restore. I had a backup, and I'm like, well, I have a backup. I'll just erase it and restore it. And so I erased it and restored it, and I was still having the problem. And so I made a Genius Bar appointment. I go into the Genius Bar, and the guy literally asks me, so have you, did you ever jailbreak it? Blah, blah, blah. No, never done any of that. And he cooks it up and he starts looking through it. And he goes over and he pulls up the profile. And he's like, well, what's this? I went, oh, my God. I'm like, I did that. And what had happened was it had restored from the backup. I was not on there when I was having the problem. So it was unrelated to the issues I was having, but it was just a funny experience. Yeah. It's like, no, I don't. Jailbreak?
Yeah, because there were different degrees of jailbreak. Like, jailbreaking out of the carrier was like a big deal. It was like terminal commands, and it was a big deal. But there was a lesser jailbreak where you could get apps on it. And I did that towards the end of the first year. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a big deal. And, you know, do you remember the first day they opened the App Store? And we all went on this orgy of app buying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was one called like Monkey Ball or something. I paid like $10.
Right, that was one of the first ones, the Sega one, yeah.
Yeah, I paid like $10 for some goofy game that I didn't even really know. You know, it's because you just wanted something. That was the true gold rush for app developers, those first days.
Yeah, yeah. And thus began the race to the bottom pricing.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think for some developers.
Yeah.
They seem to have made out okay, though. You know, it was definitely at the time a very large concern of mine. It still is a little bit of a concern of mine. I think too often developers undervalue their software and consumers undervalue software in this day and age, unfortunately.
Oh yeah, I mean, Drafts 5 just came out. It's, if you're into it, it's an amazing app. And he's got this model where you can get the free version that does most of the basic functions for free and you never have to pay anything. Mm-hmm. And then he's got a version where if you want the super powerful version, it's $2 a month or $20 a year. And people are kind of giving him a lot of grief about it. And I don't understand. I mean, he's giving you the app for free if you just want the basics. If you want the stuff that takes a ton of his time, you got to pay for it. Seems like pretty fair deal to me, but
$20 a year for a good piece of software. It's, you know, and maybe it's because of my age. I didn't grow up in the, age of the 99 cent app. I grew up in the age of the $50, $60, $80, sometimes $200, $300, $400, you know, up to $1,200 if you're getting into like full Adobe, you know, pro suite or something like that, days of computing.
Or $50 for dedupe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even shareware titles back in the day were $20. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, most shareware was, you know, and did you pay it? I have to be honest, a lot of times I didn't because I was at a point in my life when maybe I couldn't afford as much. But yeah, so, you know, the current pricing, I think, makes it easier to maybe buy software for a lot of people earlier and get into that cycle of buying. So I guess I have to admit, you know, we did a lot of notching of floppy disks on our Apple IIs so we could copy our friend's copy of whatever hacked version of insert game here, right?
You had your whole punch.
Yeah. I guess that was our version of Napster.
Right? I want you to do me a favor.
In the music Napster agent. But
I want you to open your App Store app, and I want you to go into your purchased list.
Okay.
And scroll all the way to the bottom.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Tell me some of the stuff you bought on day one.
Well, I will tell you, some of the stuff's not going to be in there anymore.
Yeah,
remember fart apps? Those were huge. Oh, I had a couple of those. That was a
big deal, yeah.
I mean, I'm a guy, you know, I thought it was funny. I have kids.
Yeah. You know? First thing I'll say is I'm doing it right now, and scrolling through all my apps is taking a lot longer than it should. I'm kind of embarrassed about how many apps I've bought over the years.
I have to even remember how to get to the purchased section.
Oh, you go
I got
to,
it. I got it. Go, yeah.
Yeah. They kind of hide it now.
It's buried. Oh yeah. Look at that. It just goes and scrolls for forever. So does it goes chronologically?
Yeah. No. If you go to the very bottom, it'll show you the first apps you bought.
Well, what's interesting is the first app that's on mine, again, I think this is because they've removed some, is remote.
No, I've got I've got OmniFocus.
Yeah, but what year was
this was the original OmniFocus that came out with the App Store. That was my very first, I know that was my first purchase because I'm an OmniFocus nut.
Right.
But it was July 10th, 2008. Evernote. I bought one called Light. You know,
yeah, I have Light. I have Light on mine. I have NetNewsWire, which was a great RSS reader.
eBay.
Urban Spoon.
I'm looking at Urban Spoon right now.
TapTap Revenge.
Yeah.
You had to have that.
Pandora.
Guess what's on here? AIM.
Shazam. Shazam is the first one on my list that I'm still using.
The one I'm really upset about is... I have one called Jared, Butcher of Songs. Do you know about Jared?
No.
So there's a Mac software company called Freeverse. They made Burning Monkey Solitaire and all these classic old games. And Jared was just, it was this little thing. It was originally on the Mac, and it's just this little yellow, I guess he'd look like an emoji, you know, like a yellow circle emoji with eyes and a mouth. And he would sing this Spanish ballad. And that's all it did.
Or remember the one that was like a robot and he would, whatever you say, he would repeat back to you in robot voice?
Oh, well, what was it? Mac Moose? Well, you're talking about on iOS, though. I don't remember that game.
Oh, yeah. Or remember Enigmo? That was one of the original games. I still love Enigmo.
I have Bubbles, which I think was like, there were all these bubble wrap apps, right? Where it was just, you could virtually
pop bubbles.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Jared. Yes, Jared.
Yep.
Air hockey, when you played air hockey with your finger.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
I have OmniFocus on mine as well. Yeah.
And of course, more cowbell. That was a big deal at the time. We sound like crazy old men right now, but it's kind of fun looking at these.
It is
Toybot. So
everybody listening should absolutely do this.
Toybot was a good one. Did you ever play Toybot?
No. Oh, yeah. I think I did, actually.
Yeah. And then there was one that came out. This one, now I'm getting a little further. It's September of 2008, but it was called Lumen, and it was like lasers, and you would align mirrors and things and shoot lasers to get through a maze. It was fun.
Yeah. Oh, here's a great one. Classics, which was basically iBooks before there was iBooks, right? I'm trying to remember the developers.
There's an app here called... There's an app that I got called LED Football, which was a ripoff of the old Mattel football game when we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was the Mattel handheld and Coleco, I guess, a football game. And that one, I made a joke about it on the Mac Power User. Some guests asked me, well, what's the one app you would love? I said, I want my old Mattel football game. I used to play that game so much as a kid, you know, growing up in the late 70s and 80s is when that was like the original electronic game. And somebody listening to the show heard me say that. Then they made the game. And he wrote me an email, said, hey, I made this based on you talking about on the show. So, of course, I played it. But then I think he sold it to Mattel. And he made a bunch of money. So, good for him. But
wow.
That game's gone now. I don't think you can get it anymore. They shut it down at some point. I guess Runners. Runners was out early, too.
We could do this all day.
Yeah, we better stop.
Ocarina. Remember Ocarina? Because that was kind of cool. Because it had this... They figured out they could use the speaker. You would actually... It was a wind instrument. Turned your iPhone into a wind instrument because you'd actually blow into the microphone hole. I think this was the microphone hole, actually.
Yeah,
it was. Would detect that and use that to create the sound. So it created a lot of innovation, I think, among software developers, too. I mean, it's easy to forget that multi-touch and multi-touch gestures and really pushed developers to kind of see what they could do with the technology.
Yeah, I got so good at Ocarina, I could play like a bunch of Beatles songs on it. So when I'd go like be waiting in line for the movies, I'd be playing Ocarina for my friends.
Right. I'm such a nerd. Through all of this if we don't.
Okay, I'll stop.
Because we got to get to talking about your what you've been up to too.
Oh, that book, yeah, we can't forget that. I got to pay for college tuition.
Maybe we got to jump and start to hit. I'm going to try and pare this down to maybe just some of the more bigger milestones. So I think definitely, I mean, the App Store counts. I mean, the App Store was a huge milestone. There was the iPhone 4S. Right, which was the first major redesign. That's when we got the metal band and antenna gate.
No, that was the iPhone 4. It wasn't the 4S.
Four. Yeah. Yes, in 2010.
I love that design, by the way. I think that's a beautiful looking phone.
Yeah, and the first one with a glass back. Yeah. And the first one with a Retina display. Still the same size, though, 3.5 inch. Yeah. So we didn't get any kind of size change. Yeah, I loved that phone. I thought that was one of the better designed phones that Apple came up with. And it was then that we had, I guess, that we had what was called the GS, right? It was the S series, and that sort of started the trend of the TikTok cycle where you have one major update and then sort of minor improvements.
Yeah, so 3GS to 4, 4S to 5. 4S. Yeah.
And the 4S was when we started getting camera improvements. I also think the 4 was the first one with a front-facing camera, although I don't remember if Apple called it a FaceTime camera at that point or not.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But I think people forget how terrible the camera was in the early days. It was pretty bad to begin with.
But we were just happy to have one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. The original iPhone also, I think people forget, didn't have any video recording. It was pictures only. And actually, even that original camera, I go back in my photo library and look at some of those pictures that I thought were great way back when, but they don't age very well, to be honest. Your old iPhone photos,
that the point and shoot guys at that point were still thinking they were fine, they were safe.
Yeah, so I think around the 4S era was when it started getting like, okay, wait a minute, this is a legitimate camera and we might not have to carry our point and shoots around anymore. So that was kind of, I think that was kind of a pretty big milestone too. And then I think, you know, a lot of the models after that, the iPhone 5, 5S, were just kind of iterative, right? Better processors. Yeah. That's when we moved into that era. Although it was the 5S that brought Touch ID.
Yeah.
And also, I think at the same time, they came out with the 5C around that time too, didn't they?
Yeah, that was when they got a little experimental. They've never really done that again. I guess that didn't work out the way they wanted.
a lot of people really like the iPhone 5C, and I still see a lot of them out and about, to be honest.
I wish Apple was more liberal with colors in the iPhone in general. Like, we just came out with the red iPhone for the iPhone 8, and I wish they had red iPhones, you know, when they released them. I wish there were four or five colors. Remember the old days with the iPods? There was always a kind of a sprinkle of colors.
A rainbow of colors, yeah. And that kind of that trend started really with the iMacs, right?
Yeah.
And then Apple carried it on into the iPods, and then it came back with the 5C. But yeah, I'd love to see Apple do a little more with the with colors and things like that, especially now with the new design, right? Because it's really just whatever color they want to put under the glass.
Yeah,
since it's the glass front and back.
Yeah, I wrote a post at Mac Sparky when the red ones came out, because they didn't do it for the iPhone 10. I said, I wish they had done it for the iPhone 10, and a bunch of people emailed me saying, well, you know, that stainless steel, coloring stainless steel isn't easy. And I had to write them back and say, I'm not asking to color the stainless steel, just the glass, you know, make it. What if you put orange glass on the back or red glass or some, you know, that's all you have to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway. So, but, you know, I guess Apple's attitude is almost everybody puts them in a case, so who cares? But I would like a colored iPhone.
Right. So I'm trying to think of some of the other also software milestones that we got.
iOS 8 was a big deal.
Right. Well, was that when we lost? When did we lose? Well, iOS 4 brought multitasking.
Yeah, iOS 7 was the controversial one where everything got flat, the design got flat, and it was a pretty rough year
for having an iPhone. Lost the skeuomorphism.
Yeah, but which is fine, but just the operating system just had a rough year. It felt to me that was the one year that my phone would occasionally just crash on me, and you know, iOS 7 was not fully baked.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, when we can't forget iOS 5 was Siri.
Yeah.
Siri and Notification Center. So that was something that was held over Mac or over iPhone and Apple fans for a long, long time, right? The lack of notifications.
Yeah.
Like, that was a big deal. Like, Android people would just, like, tear into you. You don't have notifications. You don't have widgets. All this stuff.
And can I just say for everybody out there, you know, whichever phone you like, I'm okay with that. That's okay.
Yeah, me too.
You don't have to laud it over me. I'm not going to brag about, you know, just go whatever makes you happy. But anyway, iOS 8 to me was one that really pleased me because I wanted more power out of the iPhone. It was always a fairly simple device. And iOS 8.
iOS 8 was
where they really did kind of, they fixed the bugs from iOS 7 and they put in like ways to share data between apps. And like all the stuff we do with workflow now all stems back to iOS 8, in my opinion. And, you know, it wasn't fully baked that first year, but you got to start somewhere. And iOS 8 was where Apple first, in my opinion, started pushing the envelope in terms of capabilities for the device.
Right. Yeah. I was just looking through, you know, you mentioned earlier iOS 7 being rough. I'm looking through this note of what was in iOS 7. Now it kind of makes sense of why it was rough, because not only was it a total redesign of the entire user interface, but it brought Control Center, AirDrop, camera and photo enhancements, FaceTime audio, you know, Touch ID was in there. Like, they had to cram a lot in that year.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising that maybe they had bitten off a little bit more than they could chew.
Yeah, agreed.
iOS 8 also brought continuity, which I never, until I had a Mac that really supported continuity, you know, everybody talked about how great that feature is. But I was on an older MacBook Pro at the time, so I couldn't really take advantage of it. But once you have it, I think that's one of those features that is hard to go back from.
I was just writing this morning in Ulysses, and for a family thing, I had to get up and go somewhere and literally just swing my chair, pick up my iPad. Ulysses icon is already on the dock of my iPad because of continuity.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tap one button and it's open.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, I mean, it's that, you know, sometimes you have that living in the future feeling, and that's one of them.
And I often forget about the copy paste stuff too. Like, you know, I copy something on my iPad. It works when it doesn't work for you. It worked. I used it the other day because I had forgotten about it, and I was like, "Wow, that's awesome!" So maybe it's the kind of thing when it works, it's great, but when it doesn't, it's really frustrating.
Yeah, I feel like it's not consistent for me. But there's an app called Copied, Copied, that uses iCloud to share your copy and paste buffer between your Mac and your iOS devices. And that it's a little, you have to be a little more deliberate with it, but that one is reliable. But yeah, I agree. It's all good stuff.
Yeah. Just to wrap things up, I'm trying to think of anything that's more recent, iOS 10, iOS 11. How do you feel about True Tone, or as I call it, P mode?
I think it's great. I mean, I can tell a difference. I mean, when I pick up we've got some older iPads in the house. And sometimes you pick them up and the color doesn't adjust and it's obvious. It's not as big of a deal as Retina was. Retina was the biggest screen improvement, in my opinion.
And I would agree with that.
And second behind that is OLED on iPhone 10. The OLED screen really does pop. But you know, I think it's True Tone is, I mean, why not? If you can do that, why wouldn't you?
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, and actually, I said the wrong thing. I was talking about Night Shift. True Tone is great.
Yeah. Oh, a Night Shift, I go up and down on that. I don't think it really, it doesn't seem to make much of a difference for me.
Yeah. So I threw True Tone under the bus when I meant to throw Night Shift under the bus.
Yeah.
That's what I call P mode. You know, my phone at night turns like someone urinated on it.
Oh, okay. I thought that was some fancy graphics terms. I was just rolling with you, but you're actually talking about urine. Okay. I get it now.
My daughter loves it though. She uses it all the time, but I look at her phone at night and it's like, why is your phone yellow?
What's the Mac app that does that? I forget the name of it.
Yeah. There's a Mac app. The one that they kind of ripped off. Yeah
but it's more extreme. And I tried that for a while. Brett Terpstra told me, no, you got to use this. It'll make it so much easier to go to sleep. And I was working a lot of late nights, but then I found myself squinting on this orange screen, you know, and yeah. I just didn't like it. You can turn it down, but I just,
exactly. That's it. That's exactly what I was going to say. You can, I mean, it is kind of useful if you tone back the yellow, but it gets just a little bit too yellow for me. I'm trying to more recently, you know, AR kit looks like it has potential to be something really amazing, but I think it's kind of ahead of its time a little bit.
Yeah. I left, WWDC last year, super ready to be completely amazed by, AR kit type apps. And to tell you the truth, I really haven't been.
Yeah, they're still kind of gimmicky for the most part. Some are done very, very well. I mean, there are some there's a handful of amazing apps, and it kind of feels a little bit like the early days of the App Store, right? Where everybody's experimenting, they're playing around with it, and I think in a couple of years, developers will figure out, okay, this is not a everything benefits from augmented reality. Right.
Yeah. I think the problem is we haven't seen that aha app where you're like, oh, this makes everything so much better for whatever. And it seems to me like the natural one would be navigation to, you know, turn on your phone and see a path on the sidewalk to.
Yeah. Well, like walking navigation. Yeah.
But the, I'm sure we'll get there. I'm very curious to see what Apple's certainly putting a lot of effort into this.
Yeah, there's fun applications in games, I think, and some of the measuring apps, while not accurate, are pretty neat. And I think one of the better applications is like the thing with IKEA, where you can drop a piece of IKEA furniture in your room and kind of get a sense of, you know, is that going to fit? What's it going to look like? So those things are nice little convenience things. But yeah, not anything, I think, for me, revolutionary yet. But I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So just to wrap this up, if you look back at all of your iPhones, and I'm having a hard time because I'm thinking about this too. Do you have a favorite model? Like,
I would say in terms of phone design, my favorites are the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 10. I like both of those phones a lot. And my least favorite is definitely the 3G. In terms of operating systems, I would say, I think anytime you ask me that, I would say the most recent, except maybe with iPhone 7. But right. I always
or like, iOS 7, you mean?
Because I'm always trying to squeeze more of the iPhone, and the holdup is usually software, you know. As Apple puts more power into it, now that I have the Files app and the ability to select multiple items and do that, like, if you put me back on iOS 10, I would go crazy right now. So I'm always happy with the latest version.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you with the iPhone 4, just in terms of the pure design. And then for me, I think the iPhone 7 was probably my favorite one. It just kind of was refined, and I liked that design, and it worked really, really well for me. And I love Touch ID. I am not, my listeners know, I am not at all a fan of Face ID yet.
Yeah.
I think I will be eventually. But in a lot of ways, it feels like, you know, the next generation bio authentication for sure, but it's version one of that. Just like Touch ID was
backwards.
Well, yeah, like when Touch ID was, you know, Touch ID, the first implementation of it was awesome and amazing and cool, but it wasn't perfect. And by the time we got the iPhone 7, I think Touch ID was pretty much perfect. You know, it was almost flawless. And so there's just a small jump back. You know, every time I it doesn't recognize my face and I have to put in my passcode, it's like, I remember doing this with Touch ID, though, too. You know, and I know it will improve and get better. And it's not, and I have to keep telling people when I say this, because people will be like, it's awesome. Yes, it's awesome. It is amazing. I'm not saying it's not a good place to move forward with. It's just not where Touch ID was. So
also compared I'd say to
Touch
that,
ID, it's just not
as and good. I'd also say that you and I are Californians. We never have to wear gloves. And
like, right.
If you're from different climates, the Face ID improvements are more beneficial to you, because, you know, we're just, you know, we're carrying our surfboards and then shorts and sandals most
totally
days.
Totally true. All right. So that's kind of our little brief history of iPhone. I'd love to hear from you. I'm sure you out there have your own iPhone stories and experiences and stuff like that. So shoot me some email. Share those stories with us, MacCast@gmail.com. But real quickly, hopefully not too quickly, but I do want to move on, Dave, and talk about at least your new book. So you want to tell us sort of what you've been up to, what you've been working on?
Yeah,
I might have a few, you know, questions for you related to just the creation of that.
Sure. For years now, I've been writing these multimedia books called the Mac Sparky Field Guides, and I use iBooks Author and all of the multimedia goodness. And the white whale, the book that I've been wanting to write forever, is the iPhone Field Guide. So my prior books were very focused on a small subject, like I did a book on paperless, and the whole book is on how to get better at going paperless. This book is a little wider. You know, it tries to cover how to get better at using your iPhone. It's got 44 chapters. It's got over 50 embedded screencasts. So like as you're reading the book, you can actually play a screencast, which plays a video either on your iPad, your Mac, or your iPhone, that shows you how to use the app or what I like about a certain app or how to use Notification Center or whatever the feature is I'm talking about. It's 65,000 words, 44 chapters, 450 pages, just tons of screenshots. Yeah, tons of screenshots and videos, embedded videos. And it's all, you know, it's the best of the iBooks Author can make. You know, the maximum size of book that you can release through the iBooks store is 2 gigabytes. And this one's like 1.99 something, you know. And
went to the max.
It was literally, I was like, you know, taking words out at the end to fit underneath the 2 gigabyte max, you know. But so I pushed iBooks Author to the limit with this book. And it took a lot of time to put the book together. And I'm really happy with the way it came out. And, just want to get better using your iPhone, or even if you just know somebody that could use a little help with their iPhone, I feel like this is a really good book for them.
Yeah, we all know people like that. And it's not very expensive, right?
It's $20. I mean, I don't know. It depends who you
ask.
That's
a deal.
Yeah.
No.
I got some emails from people that would disagree, but I don't know.
That's going back to earlier what I was saying. We live in this age where people think that, you know, 400 pages of knowledge with how much video did you say?
It's over 2 hours worth of video.
2 hours of video. You know? Like, you're going to spend more going to the movies and not learn half as much.
Yeah, I know.
Not even, know. No, probably not even 1% as much.
Well, not that many people are complaining, but you get a few. And the idea, nice thing about this book is I can update it. Like I am, my intention for this book, assuming some people buy it, you know, if it's a bust, I can't spend time off. Nobody's reading it, but if people like it, I'm going to update it. You know, Apple, like after we get the new operating system later this year, I'm going to update the book for that with iBooks. I can just push an update out and everybody will get that. So the book is kind of like a book subscription in a way. And my intention is to update it for free for a couple of years, and then I'm going to make a second edition, and then you'd have to buy it again after 2 years. But between now and then, you would get continue to get updates. Or if there's a hot, sexy new app that I really like, I'm going to screencast it and write it up in the book, and then you can just download the book update and get all that information. And the nice thing, because it's an ebook, it's all on your phone or your iPad or your Mac. So if you get on an airplane or lose internet connection, you still have access to all that information.
Hey, and Mother's Day, Father's Day is coming up. It might be a perfect thing to gift to someone who's maybe a little less tech savvy in your life, right?
Hey, you know, it's funny. I've heard from a lot of listeners that have been buying it for like parents and siblings, and I'm getting emails from people who never heard of Mac Sparky or podcasts, but they really like the power the book has given them to get better at their iPhone. So I it feels good. I mean, when you do this stuff, the reason you make your podcast, the reason I write these books is it feels so good when someone writes you and you know you made a little difference in their life. And
absolutely.
This book's working.
Absolutely. So people can get it now. It's out on the iBook store. And it remind me of the title again. It's in your field guide series.
Yeah, it's the iPhone field guide. And if you go to the iBook store and search me or search iPhone field guide, you'll find it. If you go to the web at maxsparky.com/iPhone, you'll get it there as well. Getting ready. Go ahead and get it. If you don't want to use iBooks, although I would recommend this, that's the best format for this. And I'll have a PDF version out in a couple of weeks. I'm just finishing that up now. But honestly, even though I make less money when you buy it from the iBook store, but buy it from the iBook store because it just works so well.
Right.
Everything is hyperlinked. Everything is embedded in the one file. It's a really great experience. And I really went out of my way to make this a book that you can also read on the iPhone. Most of my books don't read that well on the iPhone because just the way they're made. But this one has a whole separate format built into it, made just for the iPhone. So you can turn up the font size and you can get like a scrolling text mode, and you can still watch the screencast. The screencasts are all shot in a format that they'll play on the iPhone and be viewable. And there's even a screencast in the book about how to watch it on the iPhone, how to read the book on the iPhone. So if you need help, it'll help you along with that.
All right, cool. So people should definitely check that out. All right. So where I want to finish up with this, we kind of teased it at the beginning, is I'm also curious because we did talk a while back about your production when you first started doing these. So is this is still all done with iBooks Author? And the reason I'm bringing this up is I'm sure there's some people out there who have been curious about iBooks Author, curious about the process, maybe curious about how it's developed. And you said it was a little rough, maybe, or still is a little rough. I mean, well, you put a lot of work into these things. So what does it take to actually put one of these things together?
iBooks Author makes a beautiful product. If you get one of my books and read it, you'll see what I mean. Like the artwork, the typography, it's really a nice, I think it's the nicest looking ebook you can get. I just don't think there's any other platform.
I would agree with that 100%. It doesn't.
But you know, making the sausage isn't always that easy. The app is, it's got, for instance, it's got inspector panels, you know, which we haven't seen in Mac apps for, I don't know, 6-7 years now. And it's just, it just doesn't get a lot of priority at Apple. So like sometimes when I do silly things like resize the screen or something, the app will just crash. And in fairness, I am the guy who's pushing it to the limit. I mean, the book that it exports is 2 gigabytes. The actual iBooks Author file is more like 4 gigabytes because I've got so much stuff I'm throwing at it. And so I'm definitely pushing the limits of it. But so if you want to work in iBooks Author and you're not going to make a book that goes to the very limit of what Apple will allow, you're probably going to be fine. But there is kind of a workflow to it. For one thing, is iBooks Author is a book layout platform and multimedia platform. It's not a book writing platform. So these days, I'm doing all my writing in Ulysses.
Cool.
So I've got Ulysses open with a bunch of buckets for apps and chapters, and I just start filling them in. And then I use, once the app gets, once a section for the book gets written, what I do is I have a subscription to Grammarly, which is one of these online grammar checking apps. And those always work horrible for years, but right. I can tell you they're a lot better now. And Grammarly is one that I'm very happy to pay to use because they do a great job of the initial pass at my words for me. And then I have
things about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have an editor that helps me out too. She's been with me for years. So we have a Trello that we share between us where we Trello each other files back and forth. And she does some work on them to clean up my sometimes horrible text. And then after that, I go through it again. And once the text gets done, then I export it in plain text and I import it in iBooks Author. And that's when the text goes. So the text is largely written as it goes into the book. And then,
is that the easiest way to bring stuff in? If you're obviously it's the easiest way to write because, as you mentioned, iBooks Author is not a writing platform. Yeah. But you know, bringing in just plain text, unformatted, that's the easiest way to do it, and it comes in pretty clean. You don't have too many issues with that.
It's really the only way to do it. And to tell you the truth, I haven't tried for years now. But at the beginning of iBooks Author, I would try to bring in pages, formatted text with links and things with it. But
right.
Quite often there were small like defects in the book code, I guess, for lack of a better term, that you wouldn't even see when you're doing those imports, but then it would cause all sorts of headaches later and you wouldn't be able to find it. So what I do is I import it as the plainest plain text that plain text can be. Right. And then I do all the formatting in iBooks Author. So I add links. I do, you know, bold and highlighting and even bullets and things like that are all done in iBooks Author.
Right, because that's kind of what it excels at, right, versus writing. So that's the whole point. Yeah. So that's a great tip. What are there any other quick tips for, like, bringing in other kinds of media, or do you have favorite kinds of widgets? I know there's a bunch of widgets for doing different kinds of things. Do you find there's certain ones that are more useful than others, that sort of thing?
I mean, the bread and butter stuff is the real simple, like get a video in and get screenshot galleries in, and those are the easiest to use. You just drag them in. I shoot my videos largely with ScreenFlow, which is probably the best screen capture app that I think there is. I know that with the recent versions of iOS, you can record your screen without plugging into an app, but I like to use ScreenFlow. I think it's a better resolution recording. In fact, it is a better resolution recording, and it doesn't have the little, you know, red dot on the screen to show what you're doing. And it's just, I think it's a better format. If you're going to make something for sale, you want to make it as good as possible.
Yeah.
And then the galleries, you just drag the pictures in. It's pretty simple. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff about formatting. I could write a book about iBooks Author, but I don't think there's enough people interested in it. And frankly, based on Apple's recent education event, I'm not even sure that there's much of a future in it, but we'll see.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. You know, it's like a lot of great technologies that Apple pioneers and develops. Because like you said earlier, I think it absolutely is. It makes the best books. Like when I come across iBooks authored stuff in the iBook store, you can tell when someone's used it versus done something else. And it seems like what they're doing now with the updates to Pages is moving to EPUB 3, which I guess has some of that kind of interactivity. Is that right? Like you can drop in video and stuff, but it's really not the same, right?
Well, I can say this publicly, I think here for the first time, I have, for the first time, my next Max Brock Field Guide is going to be an EPUB 3 book. And I have spent, I think, something like 20 or 30 hours right now just experimenting with Pages in EPUB 3 format and figuring out where the limits are. Mm-hmm. And it's actually not bad. I mean, it does some stuff pretty well. So,
what kinds of things would you miss? Or you think it's missing from what you could have done if you were doing the same thing in iBooks Author? Or is it paralleled in just a different workflow?
It's, there's a few features missing. Some of the widget stuff isn't there, but like, you know, videos are there, galleries are there. So a lot of the basic stuff is there. But like one of the things they had in iBooks Author is like you can touch on an object and then a popover will appear.
Yeah, like callouts and stuff.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That, right?
that stuff wasn't show up. Are there
workarounds for things like that, or are you just like, nope, you just don't have those features?
You really can't, because it's an HTML embed, is what it is, and just the format doesn't cover it. And maybe they'll add it going forward. But to tell you the truth, that stuff was always kind of gimmicky in iBooks author books. So I don't miss that so much. I'll tell you the one thing that that is a problem is with iBooks author, like this book, this iPhone Field Guide, I'm able to make it so the text reformats and flows. Like, and that's particularly important for my customers that want to read the book on the iPhone.
Right.
Because if you just have these beautiful images, but they're phone size, it's going to be really hard to read it, you know? And, short of like, you know, pinching and zooming on the screen repeatedly to read the words. So the fact that you can have a book that looks beautiful for the people that want it on a bigger screen and can flow into this nice text, for people that want it on a smaller screen, that's an advantage you get with iBooks Author that you can't do with EPUB. Now with EPUB, you can make flowing text, but it's got to be one or the other, you know. And in general, like the next book I'm doing, it's fully laid out. I am making graphics and images, and it's not going to be flowing text because it just I can't do both with the EPUB format.
And so does that mean you have to target a single like screen size format?
No,
like it's really
no, it doesn't. Okay. No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean that. But what it does mean is that a book made in EPUB is going to be hard to read on the iPhone.
So it'll be more. So your layout is more optimized for like an iPad screen versus
or,
an iPhone
or a
screen.
Mac. It's anything bigger than a phone size screen.
Right.
Or I could make it optimized for a phone, but then it would just be this flowing
stuff.
It'd be
weird on. Yeah.
Yeah. And my
does
books,
it get better in landscape on an iPhone? I mean, does that matter or is it just no?
Yeah, I mean,
the screen
helps.
Is just too small.
No, it helps. I mean, if you've got there are some big iPhones, and I guess I'm biased because I'm getting older, so it's getting harder to read small text.
Right.
You know, if I was still 20 years old, I might say, oh, who cares? I can read it on the iPhone, no problem. But these days, I look at it, and I have to get reading glasses. I guess the point is, with iBooks Author, I was able to make the book so you could do both. And with EPUB 3, I really can't. To tell you the truth, if I had to make that choice, it's an easy one for me. I want a beautiful laid out book that looks great on the iPad and the Mac more than I want a book that's scrunchy on the iPhone. So that's an easy problem to solve.
Or it would require you to do like a separate edition, right? I mean, that would be the other alternative, right? You do an iPhone EPUB edition and an iPad.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
But that's a lot of work, right?
I mean, it is.
It's like the classic thing, like you have to write, instead of being able to, like with iBooks Author, write once and publish once, you're having to write once and publish twice, which is, you know, that's extra work. So you'd have to have something that you would feel enough people would buy the iPhone version for to justify doing the work, right?
And like for the iPhone Field Guide, it was very important that it play well on the iPhone because it's called the iPhone Field Guide. The next book isn't the iPhone Field Guide, so I don't feel as bad about it. That's why I'm trying EPUB for a change.
And let's be honest. I mean, I think hands down the best, if you're talking about a digital reading experience, your best experience is going to be on an iPad, even versus a desktop. I mean, it's nice on the desktop. It's nice to have on a phone for options wise. But I mean, really, if you want to sit down and read something, I'm going to grab my iPad, you know, 90% of the time to do that.
The other thing that's missing on iBooks versus Pages-based EPUB is a lot of the built-in navigation stuff. With iBooks, it builds a lot of nice navigation tools in. If you read any iBooks, like you swipe in.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though, I have figured out a way around that. I don't want to say too much more yet, but I've got some good things going on with this next book.
Will you reveal that eventually at MacSparky.com?
Yeah, I will.
It's
several months away. I mean, it's at least several.
I just want people to know, you know, where they need to be following you.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, David. I really appreciate you sharing sort of, like you said, how the sausage is made, because I do think there's other aspiring folks out there who can really benefit from that. Or even people who have been curious, like, is this something I want to maybe try out or dive into? And I would encourage people to play. I've played around with iBooks. We made for Mother's Day, actually last year, my kids and I made an iBook for my wife just as a gift.
Nice.
And it was awesome.
I hear from teachers all the time that are using these tools to make their own curriculum. I mean, when Apple showed that on stage like 5 years ago, everybody rolled their eyes. But there are a lot of really great teachers out there, and they've come up with ways to spin this stuff into teaching materials. And I've heard from people that, like, I heard from a guy recently that like works in a factory, and he made an iBook to show people how to do some job that's really hard that everybody does. You know, they have a lot of turnover, so they literally have an iBook to show them, you know, how to operate the machine or something. People are using it for all sorts of strange reasons.
Yeah, that's cool. Just internal training manuals and things like that. Wow. Yeah. It expands your mind when you start thinking about this stuff. So again, thanks for sharing your knowledge with us, because you're probably the most knowledgeable iBooks author user that I know. So I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about the iPhone and your book and all that stuff. So David, you know, is an author of the Max Barkey Field Guides. You can find those on the iBook store. But in addition, I've known him for a long time, and I know a lot of MacCast listeners know you already. But for those who don't, you're also a long time, like myself, podcaster, and you have an awesome podcast and a few other things going on. So you want to tell everybody where they can follow all that stuff?
Sure. My home base of the internet is maxsparky.com. So if you go there, you can find everything. I do a podcast with Katie Floyd called Mac Power Users. We're coming up on 10 years now, I think, or nine years. We love talking about getting the most out of your Apple technology. We have a lot of guests on. It's a fun show. And I also do a show with Jason Snell called Free Agents, which is just kind of, it's not related to Mac so much as Jason and I both quit our jobs from big companies at the same time. So we made a show called Free Agents talking about that. And in addition to the books I make and iBooks author, I also do a lot of video stuff, like how to use like OmniFocus or Hazel better. And those are called the video field guides. So if you go to maxsparky.com, you can find all that stuff.
Very cool. And you definitely should go there and check it out. So again, thanks, David. And we'll talk to you hopefully sooner than later this time around. It's been way too long.
I mean, this is probably a topic for another day, but don't you miss Macworld? I mean, we used to all get together every year and have so much fun.
Well, all right. We do have MacStock coming up.
Yeah,
are you going to make it out this year or no?
I have never been. I was going to go this year, but a friend of mine's getting married, so I have to go out of town that weekend. But if they'll have me, I'm going to go next year for sure. Because I mean, the gang is there. I feel like I'm missing out.
Yep. So MacStockExpo.com, I believe. Hopefully I'm not butchering that URL. Mike will call me out on it if I am. But I'm going to be speaking this year. Actually, I'm going to be doing a talk on Markdown, believe it or not.
Nice.
So I'll be there, and it's in July. Can't remember the specific dates, but if you go to maxstockexpo.com, you can check that out. And it's a great deal. It's a fun weekend. And if you've been on the fence, I encourage you to go. You know, I think it's great. So it looks like luckily it's going to be around for a while. It's a much smaller thing than Macworld, obviously, but that's what makes it kind of awesome, to be honest, for me. It
allows people to get closer.
Yeah. You can really interact with people and have great conversations with a lot of very talented people from our community. So consider that as an option. And hopefully we'll see you there one year. I missed last year, so I'm glad to be able to go back this year.
I think I already have it in my calendar for 2019. I mean, if it wasn't for this other obligation, I would be there this year. So hopefully soon.
All right. Well, thanks again, David.
All right, take care.
So there you go, a little look back on the iPhone with David Sparks. Make sure you go check out his book. They are really great. I can't say enough good things about him. He pours so much time and effort into those things. And as I alluded to in the show there, they are worth absolutely every penny. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, and that is Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, if you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, I encourage you to send me your emails and your audio comments. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline, that phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You leave a voicemail there. And if you need show notes, links to anything I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me hanging out on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. Or you can check out the Google Plus community. That's at google.com/PlusMacCast. That's going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.